Welcome back into the Lads Talking Footy podcast. It's me, Jordan Tana, here as always with Sam Whittaker. And unfortunately, Simon's had a loss in the family, so thoughts and prayers out to the Anderson family. He'll be back next week.
Yeah.
But we've got a special treat for you guys. We got Brad Cook, the armchair analyst himself, making his debut. We're in the very capable hands. Big NBA fan, big NFL fan, big rugby fan. Sort of getting to know his rugby league, right?
Yeah, learning.
Enjoying the NRL at the moment. So he's got a lot of opinions in our group chat. So
yeah, very opinionated guy, but you know...
So,
well, he's come dressed in his Pivot Attire. He's got the Cleveland Browns jumper on and he's got the Fijian rugby hat on. So he's ready for some hot takes.
Yeah.
So we'll get into it. Now we'll start with accountability. So tips last week, I was 2 for 2 on that one. As for the best bets, I need to go away from the three leggers because we dropped on those ones. Warbrick and Munster, both anytime try score into the Storm, -6.5 at $7.50. We went down there, missed on the spread on that one, missed on Munster. DWZ and Maju, both anytime try score into the Knights, +13.5 at $5 there. So we got DWZ, Maju, missed the Knights on the +5.5. So we got something a little bit different coming up. But how'd you go on the tips?
Yeah, well, I got 2 out of 2 as well, and the only prop I got was the Storm 1-12, so it's a little bit of a shot in the own leg by not keeping the faith as much as I should have and gone Warriors 13+. So, hey, I'll take the L there, but we still got Storm 1-12, so you might would have walked away with a little bit of money, I think.
Yeah. Brad, did you have any multis that came through on the weekend that
I
you wanted?
I did not. I had a very unlucky weekend on the multis. Yeah, we haven't had a league since back when Manly was still alive. That's when I hit my last one.
They were alive not too long ago.
Yeah.
We'll see when we come up to it. As for the review, so Storm defeat the Roosters, 18-13. I actually got a message from Sam Branks halfway through that game saying, wish out's proving you wrong right now. He had an outstanding one.
Yeah, he
had one try, an offload that led to a try, 2 tackle breaks, 87 run meters, and 287 kick meters. So huge boots to fill in a semi-final, and he did really, really well. Yeah. So the stats throughout this whole one, super even, which obviously reflected the game. Roosters had double the amount of offloads, made more tackles, missed a lot less. And I think we're really, really unlucky with that Harry Grant call as well. Oh. So incredible from Warbrick at the end. Superb season and to come off and take it off like that. So, I mean, what else did you take away from that?
Well, it was a high quality game and a lot of high drama involved in this game. I was super... So the things that got it over the line, and it surprises me that you said that they missed more tackles than the Roosters because I thought their defense was really good all night. I thought... You know, Cam Munster was actually at the forefront of that defense, and he was...
I thought he was everywhere, man.
Yeah,
he
bro.
He's making hits on, he's making runs.
Yeah, and he put that massive hit on Sam Walker.
That was huge.
I know, like, Sam Walker weighs about 40 kilos soaking wet, but, like, you know, he picked his battles well. Yeah, I thought he was sensational. And, you know, even when the Roosters started changing momentum, I thought the Storm was scrambling really well, and that goes back to Munster as well. He was everywhere, chasing down plays, and then their line defense held solid throughout the whole game as well. So, yeah, I'm not going to say they've got like a lockdown elite defense that's going to take them to the championship, but I was just really impressed with that in this game. And to go back to Cam Munster again, and his running mate Harry Grant, who you mentioned before, the game-breaking talent.
Yeah.
And those two guys really stepped up in this one. Harry Grant, like you said, had a sensational impact once he was injected into the game. His stats, 110 run meters, one line break assist, one try assist, and 36 tackles. The dude was sensational. And
that was such a ballsy move from Bellamy.
Yeah.
And because you've got Hughes that's out and you're throwing Wishart in there, and then you're just going to take off Harry Grant and rely on them to just settle. Like, that could have just been an absolute chase game that they were going to have to
exactly.
do.
Exactly. And luckily for them, it wasn't. And I thought it did work out well. Like, the injection he brings on, I mean, you could have had it from the start of the game. He's fit as fuck, and you could have had his impact going forward. But when the forwards were a little bit tired for the Roosters, he really, you know, made a lot of damage around the ruck. So, shout out to him. Back to the defense, I thought Nick Meaney diffused all the kicks sensationally well. He was outstanding again. And, yeah, the Roosters... Like you said, they played really good. 16 offloads for the night. They were completing at a really high rate. Victor Radley, although made a few mistakes.
What a mistake, though.
A few mistakes, and he still needs to get his tackle technique sorted out.
Because I'd said we haven't seen much of Victor Radley.
Yeah.
And then I think it was in the first, like, 10 minutes he just gave away just a stupid play. I was like, there he is.
Well, this wasn't actually going to be a bag job when I fucking introduced his name just now. I thought he played really well.
He did.
I thought he played well. He had 199 run meters. Both Terrell May and Lindsey Collins also carried super strong through the middle. Terrell May, look at these stats. 56 minutes, 131 run meters, wow. 6 tackle breaks, 4 offloads, 45 tackles.
Jesus, holy crap.
Yeah, and these are just 56 minutes.
That is intense.
Yeah, unfortunate for the Roosters. Lost in the dying moments. But hey, the Storm, the clutch playoff factor, got it done.
Super impressive from them. You've got Billy Smith that was out, Suoli'i that was out, Manu that's out, and they still managed to stick around and make an absolute game of it.
That was my first note I had here, is the Underman Roosters, they really performed well. You know, their defense stuck around, even though you had some shitload of subs in the back line, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have the stats you guys have, just like you said, I'm learning my NRL, but like you said as well, Sam, I thought Wishart was absolutely outstanding. Like, Melbourne just breed. They breed halves.
Yeah.
It's just non-stop. There's just half after half after half.
Yeah.
And and finally, the last note I had, the drop ball.
Yeah.
Right in front of the goalpost, led to a penalty, led to a try. I hate to say it changes the game.
Yeah.
But it probably does.
It did.
It does. And it's almost like that high tackle right at the end that still didn't, like, still resulted in a try off that set. Was kind of like a makeup call.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because that was a clear high tackle from Sam Walker on Harry Grant in the last minute. Luckily, they still scored, so it was like a moot point. But yeah, we go back to that other mistake. And I don't know what the fuck Ashley Klein was looking at.
He apologized to Teddy. He apologized throughout the game. He said throughout the game, I'm sorry about that. Yeah. I missed that call.
Yeah. I've seen,
and he's been dropped right now.
I've seen funny memes of like Ashley Klein looking at the player, and then there's like a chick in a bikini and her ass is out like over here. And there's other ones where it's like showing his back of his head, and then the next screen is like his eyes, like that dude from one of the Adam Sandler movies. I can't remember which one, but yeah. Funny memes.
As for the Roosters, though, so they looked awful at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Went on a heck of a run. Arguably were one call away from a prelim final. So they gained Spencer Lenu, Lewis Murphy, and Dom Young next year. So their back five could potentially be Manu, Billy Smith, Dom Young, and Teddy, and it could be a fight between Tupou and Suoli'i. So no real losses for them. Re-sign Egan Butcher, Radley, Teddy, Tupou, JWH, and Walker.
Good
so
Lord.
They are locked and loaded, and we got to see them at the back end of this sort of, you know, gain a little bit of traction. It'll be interesting to see what they do next year because they started really slow this year. The year before last as well, they started really slow before finding a little bit of traction as well. So they need to hit the ground running. Spencer Lenu is going to come in here and he's going to be an absolute cannonball. Between him and JWH is just unreal. And then Dom Young's going to be outstanding for them as well.
Yeah, so their forward pack was already really strong for them this whole season. Like, their go forward was never a problem for them. Lindsey Collins, Warrior Hargraves at the forefront of that. I thought Lindsey Collins was their best player.
Lindsey Collins is fantastic.
I wanted to highlight for this one. Yeah,
I'm not a big... You know, I'm a big fan of the backs and whatnot, but
yeah,
I fell in love with the game.
Workhorse, ball carrier.
He's so good.
Proved himself as, even in Origin, kind of proved himself as like one of the premier props in this competition.
I felt like he stood out.
He doesn't like have super X factor like Payne Haas or Fanua Blake with the footwork and stuff like that, but it's just a workhorse that's always going forward and very rarely makes mistakes and it's all effort, leading kick chases sometimes. So
was he the guy that caught the bomb
he mossed Tedesco. Yeah.
Yeah.
So impressive season from him. But the thing about their forward pack was staying on the field. And that was another big part that really cost them was their discipline. Waria Hargraves, Victor Radley really struggled to stay on the field. Where was Waria Hargraves in the finals? Suspended.
Exactly. Yeah.
Where was Radley like during the middle point of the season? Suspended. Yeah. So yeah, they got to sort that out. They just got to taper it back a little bit. I know the way they play with aggression and with ferocity is it's part of their game and it's what makes them successful, but you just got to get toe the line correctly because you're going to cost your team. And it did cost them their team at the start of the season.
I think the coach also had a huge mistake. I get that. Maybe he was having bad.
You're talking
form.
Sam Walker?
Sam Walker.
Yeah, bro.
You can't have him out the squad for the entire season. And he comes back and he's playing amazing like he was.
Yeah.
You know,
it confuses me the call on that because you've got a young half that's going to be the future of your club. And you're bringing him in and you're shifting Carey to 7 and you're bringing Joey Manu into 6. Joey Manu's not your 6.
Not a good 6.
And there was so much debate on whether he was going to be a fullback or what it was. Too much rotation. Just let the young kid play.
Yeah. Alba, if I am going to maybe give Trent Robinson? Yeah. I was going to say Hodgkinson. If I'm going to get Trent Robinson a little bit of a pass, I kind of noticed it in this game as well. Sam Walker's defense is dodgy with a capital D.
Oh.
So
like you said, is 40 kilos.
Yeah, I mean, it's always is going to be dodgy. But I feel like even Jaden Campbell has like a better defensive presence than a Sam Walker. You know what I mean? So maybe a part of his game he needs to improve. But yeah, definitely not the right call to replace him with the likes of like Manu and Hutchinson.
Holly Smith was there.
Yeah, so they need to sort that out from the get-go. And they can roll into the finals with some better form. They made the second round of the playoffs. So this season was actually kind of a success.
It was. It was going to be an absolute disaster for them. And then they just completely righted their wrongs. Warriors defeat the Knights 40-10. So right from the start, they went up 16-0, 13 minutes into it. Yeah, I was looking at the clock and looking at the scoreboard thinking, are we going to see like one of those games right now? The crowd was pumping. And you could see the toll that last week took on the Knights. The travel here, the crowd effect on them, all of the above. Johnson was incredible. Clockstead was great. So you've got Chance, Tohu Harris, Jackson Ford, Montoya, DWZ, Barnett, Pompey, Fanua Blake, and Rocco Berry all ran for over 100 run meters. They dominated possession, dominated run meters, line breaks, missed half the amount of tackles that the Knights did. And they went into the eighth spot of the biggest wins in week two of finals. So they won by 30 points, which put them, I think it was just behind the Eels win in last year's final. So absolutely incredible from the Warriors to just go in and dominate like
A statement victory. And what an absolute spectacle as well. And we were lauding the Knights' hometown atmosphere last week.
I know,
I was thinking
a whole new level.
Bro, that was such a good atmosphere. And then the whole crowd singing at the end. Yeah. Johnson doing the lap at the end and the crowd just...
That was crazy.
Giving them all the love.
There was like Webster had just like sent the message down, but then like sent the message to the crowd and was like, "We're just gonna have a victory lap right now."
Yeah, they
just
took him off on the opposite sideline.
They made him walk.
Must have been the trainer saying,
intentional.
Yeah, you hop off this side so you can do a lap. And you know what? He deserved it because that offense looks so much better with Johnson back in the lineup. He just has a different timing to the other halves that we've tried in his absence. He does like a little step to the line, jinks out, and then everything's in motion flowing off him. It's like he times it perfectly, and then our shape is just beautiful. So Johnson makes an absolute difference. He had two line break assists, two try assists. And it's funny that you say like all those players ran for over 100 meters because I was trying to think when I was writing my notes for this game of which players to highlight, and I was thinking, fuck, everyone played me. Everyone played so good, but I do have a couple of players, and Tohu Harris, man, outstanding again, just a workhorse, helpful in the ball playing department as well. I think our offense flows smoothly when he has a lot of touches during a set as well. He had 216 run meters, so fuck, he was actually carrying pretty good. Mm-hmm. 80 minutes, which is important. Absolute workhorse, especially with the mummified knees and the mummified elbows and all the tape in New Zealand. And 39 tackles. So once again, absolutely outstanding. And another guy, Chance Nickel-Klokstad, reliable as ever and the work rate. And when I first went to go do the stats after this game, it said he had over 300 meters, but I saw them do a post and they recounted it to 299.
Boo.
So.
Boo, yeah, give him the 300,
bro. They just took a meter off him as well. Like, they couldn't just give him 300, but anyway, still an impressive performance. One try to go with that. One line break assist, one try assist, and eight tackle breaks. But just like the Storm, I thought the most important factor in this game was our defense. A night and day improvement from last week. 28 missed tackles, which it's pretty good actually. It's still a decent amount, but compare that to last week where we missed 55. Absolutely sensational. I thought our centers did a fantastic job shutting down Ponga. Always putting
his try.
Bro.
How did he score that?
Exactly, man. I just thought it's going to be a fucking key element this week to do the same thing on Reece Walsh.
I'm glad you brought that up. Because they kept him, Kalen Ponga, they kept him to, he didn't have a single line break the whole game. Which is crazy.
Crazy considering the form that he's been
in.
So
that is insane.
Real hats off to the Warriors defense. But yeah, the Knights didn't play too bad in the middle section, but they started off way too slow, not completing a set until the 15th minute. And you can't afford to give the Warriors, in an environment like that sort of momentum.
Hostile.
And a big part of it, just as important as Sean Johnson coming back, was the effect of the logs. Because whenever we were rolling on a set, those logs were going crazy, and you could tell the Warriors were lifting, bro. So shout out the logs.
Yeah. Someone you guys didn't mention that I feel almost isn't as important to the spine and the offense of the Warriors as Sean Johnson.
Yeah.
Wade Egan.
Yeah.
Yeah, good
one. He has this innate ability to just get this, just so deep into the line and just deliver the ball just almost out the back of his ass.
Yeah.
Directly into Johnson's pocket. And it just creates so much time and just allows Johnson to do what he does best. And I just think that he is a huge unsung hero in our offense and team.
Yeah.
He's top three hooker in the game for me right now. He's, you're the red line. I just think it's incredible what he does. He unlocks that Warriors, that attack and the way that he can sort of manipulate around Tohu Harris and the edges for them as well.
It top three maybe in the finals.
Of the top three of the four teams.
When AFB went over and scored his try, I was watching the way they were working up the field, and I said to my dad, I said, Tohu Harris or Fanua Black's going over some point in this game or the next try. And sure enough,
what two footwork, tackles later. Though?
I know. Main footwork. Big man with a big step.
Man, how many tries is that for the season? Is that 10?
It probably would be. I think he was on 8 before the finals.
That's what I was thinking.
It's an insane strike rate for a
pro. It'll be 9 then.
Yeah.
And great value, by the way, on the bookies.
Yeah, I know.
They don't seem to adjust, bro. They keep chucking them out there at good money.
Stupid, like $4.50 and stuff like that.
Yeah, shout out to the back of the class for that multi that went through. They were just off Munster to $42 odds on that one. Oof. So it was pretty tough.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting year for them next year for me. Cartwright, Cogger, Will Price are gained. They're losing Fitzgibbon. Lockie Miller's heading over to Super League, and they're losing Dom Young. So
anyway, they re-signed. Get their contract cancelled for the Knights there? Get Dom Young back? No, you can't, but Jesus Christ, they're going to miss him.
They will. They really will. Re-signed Frizzell, re-signed Marju. So for me, I'm going to call it now, potential second year syndrome for them.
I'm a
little bit worried about the aging Hastings, what that's going to bring. Gamble, he played outstanding this season, but can he continue that next year? Phoenix Crossland, I think, is going to continue to blossom
I like him.
Kiwi as well.
He's a good hooker.
Yeah, he said he wants to play. Yeah, wow. He's born in Australia, but he's a Kiwi, so he can play for both. And he said, I'll play for either. And we've said, okay, we'll take that. I'm going to say no. Yeah, second year syndrome for them. That's a stacked 8 coming into it next year. They went on an unbelievable run into this, but a lot of that came down to the back three and just sort of what they could bring each week. And it's going to be interesting to see how that can sort of all mold around the halves pairing as well. But yeah.
Yeah. Now, everything you've said about them potentially struggling next year, I kind of agree with, just considering the ins and outs. Dom Young, like you said, will be an absolute loss for them. And yeah, they are starting to age, but they can take a lot of positivity out of the season, man. And it's pretty like poetic that they lost to the Warriors, because they share a lot of similarities to the Warriors. They've been a struggling franchise, you know, for the last 10 years, and they've got an absolutely rabid fan base, and they just lift off the momentum of that fan base, and they had a fantastic season. So they can be very proud of that. The guy that I'm going to highlight for them this year, and it's pretty obvious, it was Kalen Ponga. He was absolutely sensational. He is what unlocked this attack. It was actually one of the better attacks in the competition, especially during their 10-game winning streak. And it was based off him and his threat out the back. And even like catching balls and returning kicks, like he was always a chance to break that first tackle, which most other fullbacks, like, they just carry it up for hard yards and go, well, that's a good run. He made some good meters to get back to the line. But Ponga adds that little extra where he can break the line and make something happen.
I've got one note for my season review at the Knights, and that is Ponga cannot play half.
He
must be at fullback.
Yeah, absolutely. He like gets into those tram lines. And so like most fullbacks will take it into the middle and get set up, ready to go. Dylan Edwards is a perfect example of that, ready for the next carries, quick play the ball.
Yeah.
But Ponga seems to take it out to those tram lines and try and just make a little line break on the edge there. Yeah. So
it's left just side a best in Maju.
It's unfortunate. They were an exciting team. Their attack was really good. It was just unfortunate that their defense kind of let them down this deep into the competition. Like, you conceded 68 points in 2 rounds of finals footy. That is far too much, and you are going to go home. So, yeah,
good Lord.
That's something that they might need to address. But, yeah, it's still a lot of positives for the season. But like you, I am also, you know, kind of unsure about what they'll look like next year.
Yeah. Into prelims this week. So the Panthers take on the Storm this Friday at Accor Stadium. So Tonga and Luai are back for the Panthers. Now, they slot straight into their starting roles. Conga has been named as 14th man with Peachy in the reserve. So I've seen today that Luai is fit and he's ready to go. Yeah, but that will likely be the rotation. 4 weeks for a dislocated shoulder. I saw the note saying it will be heavily strapped.
Yeah.
It will be heavily strapped.
I think we see some of Jack Cogger.
Yeah.
On Friday night.
For the Storm, Hughes is back in, Olam retains as starting centre, and then we've got the same sort of situation where Wishart is in at 14th man and we've got Anderson named on the reserve, so that will likely be the rotation if Hughes isn't ready to go. So this is being played at a Coors Stadium and the Panthers have a 49% win rate here while the Storm have a 67% win rate here. Now head to head, these two have met on 43 occasions with the Storm winning 29 of those matchups, but the Panthers have won 4 of the last 5 against them. Now, the Panthers have won the last 3 prelims in a row. In 2021, they knocked the Storm out in the prelims, 10-6, and that was at Suncorp. In 2020, the Storm met them in the final. They beat the Panthers 26-20. That was at a core. Now, for the Storm, in 2020, they knocked out the Raiders in the prelims. 2019, they lost to the Roosters in the prelims. 2018, knocked out the Sharks in the prelims. 2017, knocked out the Broncos in the prelims. 2016, they knocked out the Raiders in the prelims. 2015, they knocked out the Cowboys in the prelims. So this is going to be an absolute banger. Mm. Both of these sides know how to get it done in the big game. And these are always good games when they come up against each other. In their last 3 prelim finals as well, Brian Totho has scored a try in every single match. So I'm going to be going Panthers to get this one done. My best bet for this one is I'm going to go Brian Totho, anytime try scorer, into the Panthers at a -3.5, which will give you $2.05.
Okay, yeah, I knew there was going to be
just
some
two
Totho.
Legs.
Yeah. I knew there was going to be some Totho jam in there after that stat, though. Panthers are the big favourites, $1.20, and Storm are the underdogs, $4.60, with the line sitting at +12.5. So the bookies are being pretty harsh on the Storm, considering the history that these two keep. But if I'm looking at the recent form of both these teams,
yeah, that's what I went.
I kind of agree with, you know, what they've set the line at. In the head to heads this year, the Panthers have won 26-6 and 34-16, and I think it's going to be something very similar along those lines, with, you know, maybe less than 16 points from the Storm, maybe something like 12, and then I could see the Panthers getting about 4 to 5 tries for around about a 28-12 scoreline. So I'm actually going Panthers 11-20 as my best bet at $3.50. The Storm were demolished by the Broncos, and were shaky against the Roosters, and they struggled to penetrate the Broncos' goal line D, as evidenced by their 0-point score. So they had plenty of opportunities in that game as well, and the Panthers probably have a better goal line D than the Broncos. Also, the Storm still make a fair too many errors for my liking, where the Panthers are a lot more clinical. Yeah. So all of this is lining up for the Panthers, and I will take it just based off their historical results at that 11-20 margin.
Nice.
Yep. Basically got the same. I think it's Melbourne are going to make a lot of mistakes like they have been in these last finals matches. Penrith are not going to. They're at home. I think it's going to be one-way traffic, more or less. I don't even know if Melbourne get to 10 points, to be honest. I've got Penrith 13+, and I've got Critter to score a try. He scored in 4 of his last 5 against Melbourne.
Yeah, and he's a big game player as well. But for a little intercept. It's going to be very interesting for me on that edge. We saw Elise Katoa lose his head earlier on in the finals run. And then I feel like Liam Martin is going to target him and get under his skin very early on.
Liam Martin, shout out to him. He has actually been in sensational form, and I think he kind of goes under the radar.
Yeah. Liam Martin has been very rewarding to bet on for a try scorer as well.
Yeah.
Loves a try. Yeah. Loves a try, Liam Martin.
Warriors take on the Broncos at Suncorp this Saturday, 9:50 p.m. So full strength squads for both teams, but I actually think that our bench outweighs the Broncos bench in this one. So we've got Walker, Tavanga, the Ball Bros, Surinen and Curran, and the Broncos taking in Smoothie, Piakura, Hetherington and Palacia. I just feel like we provide a bit more impact that provides like an actual role.
Piakura, but other than that, I agree.
For sure. Now, 42 games between these two. The Broncos have won 21 of those. Warriors have won 20, and there was one draw between them. The Warriors at Suncorp only have a 29% win rate, having won 6 of their last 21 matches here. But over the last 4 games, they've won 2 each. And at Suncorp, the Broncos have won 2 of the last 4, with the Warriors winning 1 and tying the other. The last time the Warriors made the prelim was 2011 against the Storm. They finished in first place that year, and we won that. You know who was a part of that? Sean Johnson.
Lewis Brown. Oh.
Lewis Brown, he scored the try.
He did. I'm going current guys in and bring into it. Broncos have not beaten the Warriors twice in a season since 2011.
Keep talking, bro.
Yeah. This is a huge game. Sean Johnson taking the Warriors into Suncorp, hunting a final against Reese Walsh, the ex-Warrior, who's gone to this Broncos powerhouse team, looking to continue a hugely successful season and right the wrongs that they did from last year as well. I'm going to go Warriors in this one to continue the fairy tale. But my best bet for this one is I'm going to go DWZ and Reese Walsh, both anytime try scorers, into the Warriors plus 10.5 at $8.50.
Okay. Damn. So, yeah, like you said, the line is plus 10.5. The Broncos are big favorites, $1.27, as you could probably expect from that line. And the Warriors are the underdogs at $3.85. So I will just start off by saying my best bet for this game is the Warriors plus 10.5 at $1.87. And if I'm going to pick something head-to-head, I'll get to that in a second. It is honestly hard for me to remove bias here because I can feel like I'm pretty good at removing bias. And some of my picks, I've gone against Adesanya in the past. I've gone against Kaikara France.
I remember you said you were going to...
actually picked against the Warriors in the past as well.
We all have.
Yeah. Well, in the past, it was pretty easy to pick against them. But it was real hard for me because I was just thinking, man, this is a fucking great story if they get this done.
Yeah.
I do believe this game will be close. And I look at the strengths of each team. The Broncos try to bully you through the middle and make a lot of yards through their dominant forward pack and their good runners like Payne, Haas, and Carrigan and stuff like that. The Warriors can answer back because not only do we have a good forward pack if territory isn't quite going our way to get us out of trouble, but we've got good wingers that can
take the heat off
great runs and make a lot of meters on the exit sets as well that can, you know, keep the balance in the middle, you know, competitive. So I don't see them dominating us in that department. I said it before, they did a mean job at shutting down Ponga last week. If they do the same thing to Reese Walsh this week, because he unlocks their whole offense. He is pretty much exactly the same as Ponga in terms of how influential he is to...
Even the way he plays, the way that he sweeps in those roams and that action, it's, you know, Reynolds has his side and we have Mam has his side and Walsh just floats in between them, which is exactly what Ponga does. So and just I mean, whatever no, side he's on.
I mean, no disrespect to Ponga, but I think Reese Walsh is so much more...
Elusive
and just bouncy and just
He's a little bit more like gorgeous, spastic. But yeah, so I hope they do a good job on him. I think they can. And then also with Sean Johnson came back, just the structure of the Warriors' attack looks so much better. And I know the Broncos have a red hot attack, and their structure is you know, better, probably the best in the competition from what we've seen so far. But I can see the Warriors, if all those factors sort of line up for them, they can make this a close competitive game. So I've got no choice but to take the plus 10.5. In terms of a head-to-head, take this with a grain of salt. Maybe take this with a tablespoon of salt. But I am going to go with the Warriors head-to-head. I think pride, the story, the whole country behind them, the whole world behind them, it seems. I've seen Justin Gaethje saying up the wars. I've seen Steve Kerr saying up the wars. I think they're going to get it done and continue the fairy tale, like you said. Whether they beat the Panthers or not in the final, who cares? They're getting through this one, Warriors head to head.
Just before you go, who's the coach of the Panthers?
Andrew Webster.
Ivan Cleary.
Yeah.
And who was the coach of the Warriors in the last time we made the finals?
Ivan Cleary.
How fitting would that be if they knock off Reese Walsh, the ex-Warriors player, storm into the finals and take on the old coach? Be fitting.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Look, I was going to come out and say that I was going to pick with my head, but you guys have won me over. I'm going all heart. We're going Warriors 1-12. I think they can get it done. I really do. I wasn't too confident with them playing on the road, but yeah, man, there's just something different about this team this year.
It's different.
And like you, I also had Reese Walsh to score because he's just so dangerous.
Yeah, on that edge for sure. And there's going to be some Kiwis in that Suncorp Stadium. It's going to be loud. Popped up on our story as well. In 2022, the Eels, they finished fourth. Warriors finished fourth as well. They both had 16 wins. And they had 8 losses. In finals week one, they both lost to Penrith. Finals week two, they both had 30-plus wins at home. Week three, the Eels played on the 23rd of September, took on the Cowboys, a Queensland team. They won, made the final. Warriors play week three on the 23rd of September, and we're playing a Queensland team. Come on, baby. They'll bring it home.
Let's go. And hopefully it stops there and we don't end up like the Eels next year.
Yeah, exactly. Best bets for this one. Brian Toto, for me, Brian Toto, anytime try score into the Panthers, -3.5 at $2.50. And then DWZ, Reece Walsh, both anytime try score into the Warriors, +10.5 at $8.50.
Yeah, I've got the Panthers 11-20 at $3.50 and Warriors +10.5 at $1.87.
I've actually combined my two together, but I've since changed my mind.
Confident.
But we'll go with the original pick. It was the Crichton to score a try, Panthers 13+, Walsh and Brisbane by 1-12, and that is a combined total of $21.60.
Nice. Okay.
Rugby World Cup. So the All Blacks defeated Namibia 71-3 last Saturday morning. Other results from the round, France got over Uruguay just 27-12, 43-10 Samoa over Chile, 28-8 Wales over Portugal, 59-16 Ireland over Tonga, 76-0 South Africa over Romania, 22-15 Fiji upset the Wallabies. He's got the hat to wear. Bulla Vanaga. 34-12 England got the win over Japan, and then this morning we saw Italy get over Uruguay 38-17. So the All Blacks don't actually play until the 30th, which is next Saturday, when they take on Italy, who are currently leading Pool A at the moment with 2 wins. So we won't jump onto that one.
Convincing.
Yeah, we'll preview them. But as for the games that have just been, so I mean, what can you take away from the 71-3 against Namibia? It's unstructured rugby. It's a lot of back and forth. You're going to disagree a little bit. I don't think we can take too much away from it, but yeah.
There is obviously an asterisk due to the quality of the competition. I've actually been impressed by these lower nations at this World Cup. They are making a jump. Like, they're actually playing some good quality structured football.
Although Namibia weren't scoring, I thought they were playing really good rugby.
They were playing all right. And all the other countries, because I've managed to catch every game so far, and all the other countries are sort of looking like they've taken their jump. Portugal was an impressive one as well.
I've been enjoying watching Uruguay as well. Yeah. They really took it to France. And then
they were 17-7 at halftime this morning.
Yeah, and they somewhat looked all right against Italy today, so it hasn't been bad for it. I know I said last week, like, just fuck the off and get into the finals.
You still kind of, but the results are, besides the Fiji result, the results are still going the way you'd expect them, but it's just a little more competitive, and maybe in future World Cups we'll start seeing those results turn the other way more often. So yeah, anyway, back to this game. Even though the, like, no matter the result, you can't deny that we play some of the most beautiful and positive rugby in the whole world. Like, I watch the other games and it's a lot of, like, kicking for territory and a lot of forward-based rugby teams that...
Statistical-based and...
England is a prime example. Jesus, they play a fucking ugly brand of footy.
They scored 27 points the other week of nothing but kicks, drop goals,
penalties.
They play a really ugly brand of footy. So, you know... Despite our results, like, you have to say that, like, we're still a fucking very entertaining team to watch. And I thought in this game we actually played pretty good. Our skill and execution to start with, I know the defensive pressure isn't the same, but it was a lot better. The passing was crisp. The passing was on target.
Until it started to fucking burst down. Impressed.
Even then, exactly. Even when it was raining, our skills were still really good. Balls out in front. And then we were using a sweeper. I don't know if you noticed that. When we would shift the ball, we'd have a sweeper come around and be that extra man and create the overlaps for us, which were really cutting Namibia to bits.
I'm glad that you saw that, because that was one point that I sort of, or that's what I sort of took away from it, because in so many of these other games that we're seeing, when we're not having the dominant front foot ball, we're struggling to create space on the edge. But you create that extra space with an extra man.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that attack flows. And one guy I really want them to introduce into it is Will Jordan.
Yeah.
He's the perfect guy that can sweep into those holes.
Well, there has been a lot of talk about whether to pull the trigger on Will Jordan and put him at fullback and
pull
take Bodie out.
Just pull it.
I think
against Italy is the perfect way to test that, right? Because Italy
I think
is,
the gun's cocked out his head and we've got the safety off.
Well, Italy's a perfect sort of competition because...
be too blunt.
Yeah. Well, that's just as blunt as you can get. Because they're pretty good, but like this, we still can experiment against them and probably get the result, if you know what I mean. So I think...
Probably.
Wow. You know, some of these results lately don't give me the best of confidence, but yeah, we should try them against them. But anyway, back to this game. I thought this was a great showcase for the attacking flair of both Damien McKenzie and Cam Rugard. And I thought they played outstanding in this one. McKenzie had 26 points, 2 tries, 77 run meters, and 8 defenders beaten. And Roygaard, who got player of the match, 2 tries, 45 run meters, 3 clean breaks, and 5 defenders beaten. Like, that is impressive from Cam Roygaard.
Yeah. He also had 3 try assists.
He just showed basically, I know it was a lower tier nation, but to me, he shows that he does belong in that squad.
He deserves that 21
squad. I want to go back in the archives when we're talking about Super Rugby and I started bringing up he's going to be an All Black.
Yeah.
I think it was Simon went back on me on that.
We've all been pretty high on Rugard as far as I can remember. Yeah.
I've got one comment that isn't so positive about the All Blacks game. Caleb Clark, bro, why are you stuck in the fucking mud?
I agree.
Yeah,
he had so much space on the weekend, time after time, phase after phase, getting so many kicks to the corners, and all of a sudden this hole and these spaces just disappear within 5 meters. And these guys aren't that quick. You see McKenzie, you see Roygaard, he's a halfback. Caleb Clark should be quicker than a halfback, and they're just sprinting away from these backs, and Caleb Clark cannot do that.
There's something. It's I don't know whether it's a confidence thing or just a maybe in shape thing or an injury, but
he doesn't look too
overweight. He isn't moving like he used to. He's not moving with the explosiveness that put him on the scene. And
a good comparison is Fainganuku was playing in the same game as him, and arguably they have the same sort of gameplay style. And definitely, you look at the difference between them, the work rate from Fainganuku on both sides of the field and just the tenaciousness to continue to break tackles.
And the effectiveness, 10 carries over the advantage line.
There you go.
So I don't know how many carries he took in the whole game, but that must be close to all of them.
Probably 10. it's going to be interesting. The other one, though, that I just wanted to touch on is Fiji upset the Wallabies. Yeah. So... I think it was Drew Mitchell came out on their podcast with Matt Goodo and that. Absolutely, there was their flogging Eddie Jones.
Yeah.
I jumped on the comments afterwards and he was apologizing for it. And then later on down, he was just like started going off on it again. And I was like, damn, I rate it. But it's just confusing. And the way that Eddie's sort of acted and gone about this whole thing. I've seen like rumors of him wanting to go and join Japan already, and you're partway through a World Cup and you're already talking about this and stuff. But I think we're all saying it's an upset, and it is an upset.
Yes.
But I don't think it was an upset.
Only
this
in
has
the
been
sense
happening.
That it hasn't happened before.
And I really rated this, and I saw later on in the week that we should start playing Fiji for the Bledisloe Cup because they'll put a bit more of a fight than the Wallabies.
Bit of a better matchup.
Yeah.
Well, on that game, I totally agree with you. It was not an upset. And if you watch that game from start to finish, besides the last 20 minutes where they kind of got a little bit tired and Australia maybe were playing with a bit of desperation because they were down so late in the game, they dominated that game. Set piece they dominated, their scrum dominated. They got over pretty much every ball. One thing I did notice about the Australians at breakdown time, they have fucking shocking technique when clearing the ball. They just go flying over the ball and then someone will come in from Fiji and pinch it. So they need to really work on that. But yeah, the Fijians just dominated their game. They always carried over the advantage line. They carried strong. Their ball skills were crisp and impressive whenever they shifted it.
I think they got clever. Also one of the most damaging ball runners in the game. And
Bro.
Huge.
Yeah. And I really should have listened to myself and put him in my bet. And it's the only leg that folded because I chose Semi Radradra over Tuisova.
Oh, bro.
Picked Fiji to win and everything. Would have had a nice 300.
He was causing havoc. And we got 8 for 8 on the picks last week, by the way. So
how good.
Fiji, not an upset because we saw it coming.
Yes.
Exactly. I am super impressed with just the way that Fiji play. You can tell that a lot of those players are playing in the top leagues in the Northern Hemisphere and they're really adapted to it. The 9, he escapes my mind at the moment. Superb kicking game.
Yeah.
Very clever around the ruck. Very clever from Fiji. They took the points on offer when they needed it. It might be, Took the points on offer when they needed to. It was just a complete performance. Yeah. And then even the Wallabies, his name bloody escapes. Sisa Natavawa.
Picked him to score as well.
Nakawa Nata. There's no way I can pronounce
cannot
it.
Cannot pronounce it without sounding a
even
little
bit. Marky Mark.
There we go. His try, where Carter Gordon kicks 50-22. Extremely clever for him to get up there, take the quick throw to Karevi. Karevi takes it forward, offloads it back to him. That's a run of, like, against the run of play try. That's not, like, earned or anything like that.
No.
Very smart.
When I watched it, I was like, that's bullshit.
it is. But it's very smart, but... You know, that's arguably that could take us down. What was it? It was 22-15. That could drop
it
a lot more.
Yeah.
So, very, very smart from Fiji. And
evil
they played a complete...
tried to kick for a bonus.
Very, very smart. I just wanted to highlight Pool C and Pool D. So, Pool C has Wales on 2 wins, Fiji and Australia both on 1 win each. So, Fiji take on Portugal and Georgia. The Wallabies take on Wales and Portugal. So, They're both taking on Portugal. They're going to need to run up the scores in that one. And a big spotlight's going to be on that Wallabies taking on Wales. Pool D now becomes a very, very interesting one as well. England are on 2 wins. Samoa and Japan are on 1 win each. And Argentina is sitting on the donut. So Argentina have Samoa this weekend, Chile, and finish with Japan. So they're all going to end up playing each other.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with Samoa. And I'm quite impressed with Japan as well. I feel like one of those two could end up tipping over Argentina and we might see them drop out.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of good, but I'm kind of the opposite. I kind of think Japanese rugby has regressed.
And
they were very competitive with England, but at the end, they fell away quite a bit.
Yeah,
and that was like the Japanese team in the last World Cup would have fucking stuck in there. The last World Cup, they beat Ireland and Scotland, made the quarterfinals. But if that last team would have stuck in there and made it a game at the very end, England didn't play too bad. Like, they actually played better than their first game, which they won by more somehow. But
I do agree with you. I just think that at the moment, I could see Japan upsetting Argentina because Argentina aren't playing well.
No, they had like fucking the worst game of the World Cup so far.
Exactly.
Against England. That was horrible. But yeah, it is wide open just because all the teams are kind of on equal playing field in terms of their ability at the moment. I think England's going to come out of that pool number one.
Yeah.
They're just playing some eat-ass footy at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're actually, starting...
I can't even watch it, honestly.
They're starting to... Well, the last 20 minutes against Japan, they started to play with a bit of confidence, and it's kind of like, okay, if they can start getting a balance here, England might be not back, but like a somewhat dangerous proposition.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to just make some quick picks for this week's one? So we start off with France, Namibia. We're going France.
Yeah, France.
I got France.
I laugh because we started off last week and we went France, Uruguay, and I was like, Uruguay. Yeah. And then it nearly happened. I was thinking, man, I should have backed that up.
Say Namibia.
Yeah, yeah.
Argentina, Samoa.
I've got Samoa in an upset.
Yeah. I'm going to say Argentina get this one, but it's going to be close.
Well, actually, if Lima gets his kicking tee back, then we'll get the win. But otherwise, nah.
Fuck, I guess I'm picking Samoa. I thought I was going to take Argentina, but my notes have Samoa. It could go either way.
I was wondering why you were looking at me like that. I was like, what are you up to? Yeah. What have you just opened up?
I must have done these wrong because I've gone Portugal over Georgia.
Oh, what?
No, but I've gone Portugal with the plus 15. I think that's what I did. I think they'll cover the line because it's a big line and Georgia didn't look too good against Australia.
I think they're going to get the upset too. I've gone upset.
They
look
pretty good against Wales.
I've got Portugal with the right out upset.
I'll go Georgia.
Georgia. We got England versus Chile.
Yeah, I've gone England.
Chile upset. No, England by 40. England by 40.
Okay. Yeah. Now the next three, they get big. So Ireland versus South Africa.
You go first, man.
Man, I want Ireland to win so bad. But South Africa are going to be pretty comfy, I think.
Damn. I'm going to say Ireland. Yeah, I'm going to go Ireland.
I like the way Ireland match up with South Africa. That's
physical.
I like the way South Africa match up with everyone else but Ireland.
Yeah.
Ireland match them physicality.
Love to see it.
I want to
be wrong. I don't want South Africa
and
to
their structure on attack looks a little bit better than South Africa. So I think, honestly, we, New Zealand, match up the best with Ireland, in my opinion.
No Malcolm Marks either for South Africa, which is a huge loss.
Yeah, well, there you go. Pundi Aki has been a wrecking ball as well.
Jesus, what, four, five tries?
Four tries already. But see how they've played fucking their starting lineups for two. Oh, anyway. Yeah. Scotland versus Tonga.
I'm going to go Tonga in this one.
Man, they look shit, though.
Yeah.
Damn. They did.
Yeah, they got experience, and I haven't been impressed by Scotland, so this is my one that I'm going to take a leap of faith on.
Damn, one game against South Africa, the best defense in the world? Yeah, you're out on Scotland?
I haven't been impressed by Scotland either, but I'm not picking Tonga.
No, but like, when have you not been impressed?
I've got Scotland in just their World Cup form.
Nah, get up, Fikatoa.
Okay, well, I'll go Tonga then. This is the final game. Wales versus Australia.
I'm going to say Australia get this one.
Yeah, I've got Aussie redemption.
Yeah, I've got Aussie too.
Yeah.
Look at that, kumbaya.
It's going to be interesting score in that one because they need to get up on them. So.
Honestly, Wales is the better team from what I've seen so far. Wales should win this 100%. Game. 100%. But I just have a feeling Aussie's going to get it done.
Me too.
Yeah. NFL. So we just had round two. Player performances that impressed us. I'll start off. I've got Brian Robinson from the Washington Commanders. So he's a two-time national champ with Alabama, was taken by the Commanders in the third round of last year's draft. But prior to the start of his rookie year, Robinson was shot twice in an event of an armed robbery after he was leaving a restaurant. Crazy. He returned to the NFL 2 months later, but it took him a lot of time to get into it, which you could understand having just had two bullets in your leg.
Yeah.
In year two, he's really starting to show what he can offer to this team. Against the Broncos, he finished with 87 rushing yards, two touchdowns, as well as two receptions for 42 yards. He's a skilled two-way running back on an under-the-radar Washington team who is also now 2-0 to start the season. And he's definitely a guy to keep an eye out for, because these multi-dimensional running backs are worth a lot within the league nowadays. Definitely. So, yeah, shout out to Brian Robinson.
Well, especially with all the controversy on like the value of a running back, it's good that a lot of these guys are coming into the league now with that dual threat ability, and it's kind of swaying the pendulum back in their favor in terms of getting their money.
Aaron Jones and Christian McCaffrey are the catalyst for that. They offer so much within their offense, and you can play a double back sort of system and have them as like a tight end sort of close option that you can bail out, and they're powerful as well. So shout out to Brian Robinson.
Well, speaking of a player that impressed, and speaking of Brian Robinson, I've gone Bijan Robinson from the Atlanta Falcons, and he was instrumental in their comeback win 25-24 over the Packers last week. The eighth pick rookie had 172 total yards, 124 rushing, and 48 receiving. And I was most impressed when watching the highlights of this game of the way he moves.
Yeah.
And old heads might not like this comparison, but he's one of my favorite old head players, and that's Barry Sanders. And I see a lot of similarities in the way he moves, with the subtle footwork and the ability to kind of change direction while maintaining, I want to say acceleration, because he's still kind
it's
of
quick
accelerating through this. Through the gap.
Yeah.
And
it's like a swerve step.
Yeah.
Like he comes into the line and he's kind of finding his angle, and then he just chops it real last
minute. And that, from the highlights I've seen of Barry Sanders, that's exactly what he does as well. It's not like a big Sean Johnson bap and then sort of go. He's just maintaining his speed and changing direction. And there was a couple runs in this game where he left two Packers defenders touching earth. And especially that one run where they had the overhead cam.
Yeah.
That looks so sick. So he was impressing me with just the talent that he showed when running the ball. Also, you know, showed that he can be a dual threat as well, receiving passes and doing good work after the catch. He is super talented, man. Just the way he moves, I really like it, and I'm a big fan of Bijan Robinson.
Nah, I rate it. Bijan Beanie.
I love him.
Yeah.
my player that I've got that impressed is Puka Nacua, the Rams receiver. Just in case you guys think this is a replacement for Cooper Kupp and his numbers are going to disappear as soon as he's back, that's not the case. This kid's for real. He set high school records in Utah,
Damn.
The state, not the school, for catches, touchdowns, and yards. And he already has half as many receptions as he did in his senior season in two games this year.
Yeah.
It's 25 catches to 42 back in his senior season at BYU.
Damn.
If he continues on track that he is now, I've seen, I think he's going to absolutely smoke the regular season record for total completions.
Mm.
I can't remember exactly what it is off the top of my head, but he's such an outstanding wide receiver in the way that he plays that slot, and he's just like a bailout option.
Anyone that can get 15 catches, not receptions, he had 20 catches. He had 20 targets, 15 catches against the San Francisco 49ers defense like that.
Mm.
Do you want me to do it? The stats are amazing, but do you want me to say something? I was like, fuck, those stats are mean. And so I went and watched the highlights. I wasn't like super impressed. It was just catching heaps of balls, and he's getting himself free, but I was like, there's kind of like, it's just the fucking.
I know what you're
saying. Giddy effect. Yeah. It's the, I'll run to the basket now. No one stops me.
They
you know
ran
what
a
I mean?
Lot of
it's not like
routes.
Spectacular. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't. To be fair, Cooper Kupp's not spectacular.
Oh, I kind of like the way, like, he's a, like a big figure and he catches the ball.
Yeah, but like,
Cooper Kupp's not spectacular.
He does spectacular catches and things like that, but you watch his routes and stuff. Yeah. He's just doing simple things.
That's a real genius.
At a really high level.
Yeah.
Maybe he could prove me wrong, but I'm just kind of like,
don't get me wrong, his numbers are not going to stay the same when Cooper Kupp's back.
Nah,
they
it's
will regress,
be a really
but
nice
they're going to have a great 1-2
That
punch.
Thing you say about his records in high school and stuff like that, that is actually impressive. Maybe I do sleep because, fuck, it's not easy to lead your whole state in receiving yards.
I'm pretty sure those records are still active.
Fuck. Shout out Buka.
I wish I had the stats for those exact, but yeah.
That's all right. Team performance that impressed us. I was going to go with the 2-0 Buccaneers, led by Baker's Bombs.
Glad you're mentioning them.
I'm actually going to be going Dallas after you picked them last week. So
okay.
They've been in New York 70 points to 10. So both the Giants and the Jets, they've knocked off convincingly in back-to-back weeks. Defense is firing, yes. But you know what Dak hasn't done yet?
Throwing an interception.
Throwing an interception.
Yeah.
So 143 passing yards in week one, Not a lot, but the defense was picking up everything for him.
Yeah.
At 255 in week two, without a pick, CD is firing, Pollard is firing, and the Cowboys are red hot. And if Dak can just find his role, have a high completion rate, and just use his offense, then they're going to be real, real dangerous. And yeah, I'm super impressed.
Hey, do you know who is the third highest scoring fantasy player right now, or fantasy item right now? The Dallas Cowboys defense.
Have you guys heard the rumor that the Dallas Cowboys might be looking to start running Michael Parsons at tight end to try and get him an MVP?
Whoa.
I saw something on that. That I didn't read into that. That is such a Jerry Jones move. That is.
I've also got another crazy call about the Cowboys that I heard today.
I think I know the call. Yeah, it'll go into my next topic, now,
so I'll wait around.
I don't want to steal your thunder. Deal said. The team that impressed me was the Baltimore Ravens, and they got a 27-24 win over the Bengals. And although the Bengals haven't looked very good, they still got a lot of talent, and they're still not the reigning, but they've made the last two conference finals.
Hmm.
Joe Burrow is dealing with an injury. I get that, but although the score's close, they were still comfortably in front for like most of this game. And that is impressive to do, considering that they're still dealing with injuries in their own right, which the Ravens always seem to be dealing with some sort of injuries. J.K. Dobbins still out. Marlon Humphrey still out. I know Mark Andrews is kind of working through something at the moment.
Yeah.
So
Gus Edwards was a dog in that.
Gus Edwards, yeah. Game. Yeah, next man up. Yeah, Justin he was Hill, fantastic.
They're both averaging really good yards per carry. I think it's 5 and 4 yards per carry.
Yep. And then you've also got that guy fucking at quarterback who can pretty much act as a running back in every game he plays. So they were outstanding. And I was really, I look at this team now, especially on offense, their defense is always pretty good because that's just what the Ravens kind of build their identity on. But their receiving core is actually pretty deep. Mm. It looks on paper like there's no standout player, but a guy that I think has shown the glimpses of being a wide receiver one is Zay Flowers.
Yeah.
Zay Flowers has looked pretty good in his first two games. And
give
if
him
you,
his flowers.
Which is great because OBJ has not looked like shit.
Nah.
Yeah, well, I was going to mention that they've just got like a deep core around them because they've got OBJ, they've got Nelson Agholor, they've got Rashad Bateman.
Agholor's looked good.
Agholor has looked good, and he scored a nice touchdown in this game. And then they've also got a Mark Andrews who is, I know he's working through some injuries, but at the end of the day, he is a top five receiving tight end in this league.
Top three, I think.
Oh yeah, I just wanted to kind of blanket it because I was kind of thinking
fair enough.
Hawkinson's,
you were looking.
Hawkinson's playing pretty good.
I like to make claims, you know.
Yeah. I will go top three. I will agree with that, but you know, while he's on injury, I won't go too far out on the limb.
That's fair.
You know what? At the end of the day, this team comes down to a guy that's starting to look comfortable, the guy that's got his money thanks to Mama Jackson, and that's Lamar. He played pretty good in this game. He was 24 of 33, so pretty high completion rate, for 237 passing yards and 2 touchdowns. Also rushed for 54 yards, which he seems to, you know, average in every game. And yeah, when he's playing like this and he's throwing darts, because a lot of those passes, I was watching the highlights, I was like, fuck, man, those are actually zipping passes. Like, Lamar's coming into the season on form. Yeah, he's going to take this team pretty far. And if I'm being honest, if you look at the AFC, I know you can never ride out the Chiefs, but it's pretty open right now. There's no like clear team that's established themselves like your 49ers and your Cowboys have on the other side of the conferences. So yeah, Ravens, watch out for them because they come.
I'm taking a bit of a different angle this week. We're going away from the NFL, and I've actually gone with the Colorado Buffaloes in the NCAA football. I only tend to watch college sports, college football, college basketball, when there's a narrative. And man, this has been a full takeover. Led by Deion Sanders, he's got I think he's got three sons there, actually. They had one of the best college football games I've witnessed on the Sunday afternoon. They had a rival game against Colorado State. And man, it was just a full family Sanders performance. It started with Shiloh, his middle son, I believe, getting the pick six, taking it to the house. And it ends with Shador Sanders, the quarterback.
That was fucking me up. I thought Shador was playing corner.
Yeah, we get a message from JT. Is Shador the quarterback in the corner?
Because their names are similar. Yeah, I was like, fuck, is he playing both? That's crazy.
The Shador Sanders, he lost his number one receiver in Travis Hunter after what I thought was ridiculously illegal hit. Targeting should have been.
Well, it was.
Should have been ejected.
He got targeting though, right?
No.
No, he didn't.
No, it wasn't. It was just a...
apparently he's been getting death threats.
Yeah, which is... bit excessive.
It's a bit far.
Excessive.
Still a kid.
Yeah, so Hunt is out 3 weeks from that hit, but Shedeur Sanders, without his star wide receiver, leads them on a 98-yard drive to take them into overtime with an absolutely clutch two-point conversion. And did the same thing in the second overtime after they went back and forth with, I think, two touchdowns apiece on the third one. Deion and Shedeur said, man, screw this. We're just going to go for the two-point. And, man, he had everyone in his face, and he's throwing it. Money. Big ballers.
Yeah, shout out Coach Brown.
And I wanted to actually have some sunglasses on for this segment, but I forgot them, so.
Yeah. Coach Brown.
Sorry, guys.
Gave me one of
actually, sorry. My last little point on that, almost forgot, regarding Deion Sanders. I think there's a chance that in the next 3 to 5 years that we could see Deion Sanders as the head coach for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah. I did hear that.
We're
take
in the jersey
today.
Right now.
That's why I ruined it for you.
No, no, I'd rate that. I really would.
Can you give us your best Coach Prime impression?
No.
Well, have you got one?
I don't know. Like, well, how does he sound like? Like, hey, Coach Prime.
Prime.
Man, what are you doing over there, kid? I don't know. Is that all right?
It was Mr. T.
It wasn't
more like,
bad. Yeah.
I pity the fool who tried to put a hit on Travis Hunter.
Gave me one to feature in the upcoming round. So I want to go LA Chargers taking on the Minnesota Vikings in Minneapolis. So the Chargers and Vikings are both 0-2. So why would I be saying and that I'm really excited about this?
Because they
offense. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, Justin Herbert and the Chargers through 2 weeks have scored 58 points and they've lost by no more than 3 points in either match. The Vikings are kind of similar as well, but Justin Jefferson has absolutely been eating yards in the first 2 weeks. Yep. I feel like this is going to be super high scoring, a lot of touchdowns and a real battle between Keenan Allen and Justin Jefferson. So keep an eye out on that one.
Yeah, Keenan Allen has been pretty good to start the season as well. I'm actually going to go the opposite direction. I'm going to highlight a game with two undefeated teams, and I'm going the Eagles going down to Tampa Bay and taking on the undefeated Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I think this game is a bit of a are they for real game. And it's a pretty uphill battle for the Buccaneers, but if the Eagles are traveling to Tampa Bay where it's a little bit hotter than Philadelphia, it's a little bit of a different environment, it could be a bit of a game on our hands. And you know, the Buccaneers have looked dangerous on offense. The Baker Mayfield-Mike Evans connection has been bearing its fruits already. Baker with 490 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, and 104.4 passing rating to start the year. Mm. And Mike Evans with 237 yards and 2 touchdowns. So they've been linking up well. So
they've been nice, real nice.
And to be fair, the Eagles have lost a few players in their backfield on defense, and they haven't quite looked as unbeatable as they did in this regular season last year, because like, what were they like 16-1 or something?
Yeah,
they were dominant all of last year, so they are still, you know, they were within one score of winning the Super Bowl last year, so they're still a quality team, and they still have, you know, Jalen Hurts, MVP runner up last year, AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, who has started the season extremely hot. But I don't think it's going to be an easy task for them to get the dub in Tampa Bay, especially a confident Tampa Bay and a confident Baker Mayfield, who I admittedly am like a little bit of a closet fan of. I like Baker Mayfield.
I like him too. He's a good player.
Yeah,
good player. Quirky.
You know, he's earning himself.
He's real quirky.
I also had the Philly and Bucks, but I'm going to go in a different direction. Guys, I'm going to give you some stats here.
Yeah, go for it.
Quarterback has 7 touchdowns, 1 pick, 106 quarterback rating, and is averaging 326 yards per game.
Jordan Love.
Does that sound like an MVP candidate to you guys?
Early as days, but so far, yep.
Okay, well, that's what the Philadelphia Eagles are giving up in the pass defense every week.
Ooh. And I did say that.
Statistically,
though,
right now, the Philadelphia Eagles are the worst pass defense in the entire NFL.
Okay.
Second in yards given up, first in touchdowns allowed.
At much you done.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not going to like hearing this. And I'm going to even go further with it. The Bucks offense is on fire. The Philadelphia pass defense is struggling. I'm picking a Bucks upset.
Ooh.
Yeah, I like it.
You agree with that?
Well, it's in Tampa.
Yeah,
that's
a thing.
That is real tough. The combination between Baker and Mike Evans is just lethal.
It's looking good, man.
If they can get that going, absolutely. But Philly has a lot more to sort of offer in terms of different offensive weapons. They've got a scrum like nothing else. That thing belongs
to
the World Cup.
That's
the only mall in the NFL.
I genuinely don't think we're ever going to see that stop.
Nah. So they've got layers to this, but I do think it's a tough ask.
It is a tough ask, and to be honest, I
take the money.
I believe it less more than I do, but you know, it's I'm here for the pot.
I'm here for you.
I'm gonna take a swing. I like to be dramatic. We're gonna
Buccaneers.
I'm picking the Bucks upset.
Oh,
Eagles, baby, all the way.
Brad, what matchup are you looking forward to this week?
Just went through that.
Oh, that was.
Oh,
it,
yeah, sorry, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, he copied me.
Yeah, yeah. Copied and went a different direction.
What original matchup do you looking forward to?
Power rankings. So last week I had in first place 49ers, second Dolphins, third Cowboys, fourth Jags, and in fifth place I had the Browns. So this week I'm sticking with the trend and basing it just off this season. In fifth place, I'm going the Philadelphia Eagles because of that scrum. It's just so dominant. Yeah. Like they can. It's used in a manner to close out games. And when you can close out games like that, it's just like, it's relentless. It's unreal.
Jalen Hurts' jam is.
Yeah, exactly. Two touchdowns in his last game. In fourth place, I'm going to Baltimore Ravens. I've been really impressed with the defense from them. It's balanced on offense. And Lamar Jackson is an absolute dog. Third place, I'm going Miami Dolphins. I'm going to push them back from the second place that I had last week. And that's just because the 49ers I'm putting in second place. And in first place, I'm going to be going the Dallas Cowboys.
You're giving it up.
I'm rock hard for that defense right now. Dak without an intercept, Tony Pollard, CeeDee Lamb. It's looking really, really good. So how about them Cowboys?
Yeah, well, that's an impressive top five. We're going to get to maybe the lamest top five of all time. So I have the exact same top five power ranking. Nah, mine, bro, because I'm doing it on a projection basis and from what I've seen so far, and I've got the exact same top five. I haven't made any changes. I've got the Baltimore Ravens, who are now 2-0. Kansas City, 1-1. So I still kind of favor them. They got a win over the Jaguars. That's not an easy win to get. So it's pretty impressive from them. I got the Philadelphia Eagles at 3. I know they've got some flaws, but they're still getting results done. And their offense is still like kind of ticking on all cylinders. So I got them at 3. Dallas, I still have at 2 just because, I don't know, maybe I claim to be a closet Dallas fan, but maybe I'm a closet hater because I can't trust them after 27 years of not being in a conference final to go and get I'm going to say that the San Francisco 49ers, who have had success, well, not success, but have been to Super Bowls recently, are probably still the number one team. So, yeah, that's my top five.
I feel you, but I've kind of gone a little bit different direction. Fifth spot.
Browns won. No.
I have the Baltimore Ravens at 5.
Yeah.
Basically for the same reasons you guys, even with the injury to J.K. Dobbins, their rushing attack is still dangerous.
Yeah.
Big Mark Andrews, I think it goes Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, gap. Yeah.
TJ.
He's doing good, but I think that's a product of the system.
But to be fair, it's Travis Gap, Mark Andrews.
Definitely. Yeah. At 4,
small gap, TJ.
At 4, I've got the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
Just absolute dangerous offense. Tua can throw for days. Tyreek can get open in a fucking shoebox.
Yeah.
3, I have the San Francisco 49ers. Very complete team. I think they're going to do great. I'm not 100% sure on the quarterback yet. I know he's good, but I just think when push comes to shove, I don't know.
He's lost one game since he's been a starter.
I know.
It was the Super Bowl.
He's pretty good.
He's pretty good. In 2, I've got the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
Like JT said.
Damn, I'm excited for this. Who's number one?
Absolutely.
He's going to say Kansas
City. Absolutely complete team. But yeah, they haven't done it in 26 years.
Yeah.
And number one. The Golden State, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes, Steph Curry, Travis Kelce, Klay Thompson, Chris Jones, Draymond Green.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Until they've been beaten where it matters, they're my number one.
Damn. Okay.
Tom Brady is the GOAT. There is one guy that can catch him, and it's Pat Mahomes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And he's on track for that.
I think they've got the best quarterback, and I don't think it's close. I think they have.
No, that's definitely
good. I think they have the best receiver.
Travis Kelce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Damn, 100%. A receiver out and out?
Yeah.
Like, including, like, Devontae and Justin?
I'm talking about when you get to the playoffs.
Do you agree?
When you get to the playoffs, when it matters, who are you trusting to get open the most? I'm trusting Travis Kelce.
Yards after Tyreek. Carry.
Tyreek this year.
Let's get him there.
Nah, you're making a good point. No, I'm just trying to reach for other things. But
Chris Jones, to me, is no question the best defensive player in football.
Damn, do you agree with that too?
No, I don't. Micah Parsons is fucking...
Yeah, I agree with Micah.
Bosa, he's up
bro,
there.
Bro, you see
he's
that little Euro stuff he did on the center?
Yeah, he was just playing with him.
Yeah, bro.
That was funny. There was someone else doing Miles Garrett. Like a week ago. Miles Garrett
But Miles Garrett isn't as good. Miles Garrett is good, but he's not as good as Micah.
Let me just clarify. I do think that Micah Parsons will win Defensive Player of the Year. But I think that Christian... Like, to the Chiefs' offense, I think he's more important than Micah is to the Dallas defense.
Yeah,
I think Dallas defense is still incredible without Micah.
Yeah.
The Chiefs aren't what they are without Chris Jones. Well, it's just plain simple.
Yeah, I agree.
I like it.
Triple dip touchdown parlay. So last week I had Calvin Ridley against the Chiefs, Justin Fields against the Buccaneers, Cowboys defense against the Jets. Those total odds were 29.70. Only one that came in was my boy Justin Fields. The Cowboys defense.
Did he get a touchdown?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, nice little rushing one and then bagged the coach. Cowboys defense didn't need to get an interception, pick six against the Jets. Yeah. They were just doing their thing with sacking him, and Ridley just couldn't get it done. So this week, I'm going Jaylen Waddle against the Denver Broncos. He's due.
Yeah.
CeeDee Lamb against the Cardinals. DK Metcalf against the Carolina Panthers. So odds aren't out yet. We'll review that next week, but jump on.
And last week I had Saquon Barkley, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and George Kittle. Unfortunately, I went wrong with Amon-Ra St. Brown and George Kittle, but Saquon Barkley got two, I believe. So
yeah, he did.
You know, he kind of helped me out there, but unfortunately, it's still a miss and it's still a one from three. But this week I am going with the TAB touchdown multi. So the lads have got another featured bet for you guys, and that is the Travis touchdown multi. And it's a Travis sandwich with a bit of lamb in the middle. We've got Travis Kelce, one for one in touchdowns in the games this season. Mahomes' favorite target, and Mr. Taylor Swift should find the blank space in the end zone.
Confirmed by Jason Kelce, by the way.
Yeah, he did confirm that. CeeDee Lamb, the filling to our Travis sandwich, is Lamb, specifically CeeDee Lamb, who has averaged 105 run meters in his first two games and will be hunting a touchdown against the lowly Cardinals. We think Lamb is going to go well with some jam. And Travis Etienne is the third leg here. The other piece of the Travis. The Jaguars play the Texans, who have conceded 6 rushing touchdowns in their first two games. So I expect Etienne to use his two legs to run in our third.
I like that. That's our last week of the 3-week trial with the TAB.
Okay.
I just got an email today saying that they will be reviewing to see how we went with that. So if you are listening to it, jump on it. Help boost the numbers.
And yeah.
We're keen to...
We'll guarantee again, this one.
Yeah, yeah. We've just been trying to, you know... join this partnership and give them a little bit of fold before we start taking back. But look, it's something that we're pretty keen to get amongst. And like we said, there's a lot of stuff that could sort of moving forward could come from this, which would be quite cool. And they are good buggers to communicate with and work with at the moment. So pretty exciting. Yeah. And the TAB's got a bit of stuff coming up as well. And a few promo deals.
A lot of sports.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
a lot of promos to be fucking put out there.
Get amongst. Yeah, for sure.
What's Brad. Your... I believe it's more than three.
Yeah, it wouldn't be me if I went over the top.
He's gone
if
for
I didn't
the,
go over the top. So I've gone five touchdown multis to try and flex my brain, even though we know this isn't going to come off. I've got Christian McCaffrey.
Stop trying to reverse jinx it, boy.
That's exactly what I'm doing. Yeah. I've got Christian McCaffrey, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Jay Jettas, and CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah,
I've got all five of them. I can't give you the live odds right now, but Sam will put that up for you guys later, he said.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I like it. UFC. So, fun to have my first one that went down, and my boy Max Holland. Ended up going down in that one, but take us away with what you thought from the card.
Yeah, so, perfect pick for me, both me and Simon, because Jack Della Maddalena gets it done defeating Kevin Holland by split decision. So, it's probably the first time we've gone against you and gone right. So, hopefully we'll ride some momentum. Razor close fight. I think JDM was ultimately the rightful winner, edging the first two rounds very slightly, Oh, no, the last two rounds, sorry. 127 strikes to 105 in favor of Holland, but JDM seemed to have just a little bit more pop.
Yeah.
And he was more accurate, 55% to 36% in favor of JDM. So
Should it really have been split?
Yeah. I was leaning JDM, but I wasn't surprised when it was split because... it was a very close fight, and it was pretty similar to the way I had it breaking down.
Yeah.
Kevin Holland was landing shots at range with obviously an 81-inch reach.
Crazy.
And Jack Della Maddalena was trying to close that distance and try pushing him up against the cage, which he struggled to do because Kevin Holland was doing some weird movement. He was kind of turning his back at some stages.
He was giving up his back.
Yeah, but in a striking realm, not giving up his back.
I think that's what he wanted. I think that's he wanted Jack to grab the back so we can start working off his back.
Or off the ground.
That's what I heard in a TikTok anyway.
That's too extreme of a weird game plan.
Why would he be turning around then?
I just think that's his unorthodox way of dodging. He didn't get hit clean very often when he was doing that.
But he does like to fight off his back. Yeah, he does for sure.
But I was kind of...
And I'm not sure, but is that JDM's strength? Like, is that something he's...
No. Okay. He's more of an anti-wrestler who defends takedowns very well. Against a good grappler, he'll sometimes jump guillotines too much. But he is an anti-wrestler. And Holland likes to strike. Like, he's got good jiu-jitsu, but he doesn't try to implement the grappling, like, barely ever unless he has to.
The only thing I knew about this fight is that 3 rounds, I did not see it getting finished. I was almost certain this was going to decision. Yeah.
Damn, a lot of people had finishes. I picked decision, obviously.
They're two hearty-ass motherfuckers, man.
Yeah, that's the thing that swayed me in terms of decision because of Kevin Holland's toughness, which there wasn't a super amount of impactful strikes that landed in this fight that could put him in danger. So, this fight played out after the first round, you could kind of go, this is probably going to
a decision. I think in a 5-round contest, then, you get a finish. But especially the way they were fighting, they were kind of just chilling for the first couple.
Well, I was extremely impressed by Jack Della Maddalena's boxing. It was at an extremely high level, very defensively responsible, very good at bouncing in and out of range, would unleash with good combos, body, body, head. Like, he was... very high level, didn't get touched all too clean that often. Like, I think Holland's stats might be a little bit inflated because a lot of them were bouncing off the guard of JDM. Yeah. So I was impressed by the performance of JDM. He found it hard to, he found it hard to hit Kevin, which is another thing I got here. But, you know, in terms of what's next for these guys, I think Jack Della Maddalena, that's 6 wins in the UFC now. Yeah. So he is on a very impressive run. He is actually one of my favorite fighters now. I'm a fucking big Jack Della Maddalena fan. I think they need to rebook the Jeff Neal fight. A solid boxer, power in his hands as well. I think JDM's got probably a little bit of an edge in technique, but still, we saw what Jeff Neal's dog was like in that Shavkat fight. I don't know, you've seen that fight where they, were going back and forth. So I reckon that'll be a hell of a war there. And for Holland, I
was interested on this one because of what Simon said last week in terms of what he actually does moving forward. Do you think he's going to go upper division? Or?
Well, in his press conference, he did call out Neil Magny.
Yeah.
And he's done the UFC a lot of favors. And Neil Magny is a spot ahead of him in the rankings.
Yeah.
But Neil Magny's on a bit of a slide. So I can see them giving Kevin Holland Neil Magny. I know losers don't usually go up the rankings, but they're both on a bit of a slide. I could see that match happening, and it's a pretty favorable matchup for Kevin Holland because Magny's getting pretty old now, and he just looks a little bit slower.
Holland's lost 4 straight now? Was it 3?
No. Holland, that's only 1 loss for Holland.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's been all good and welterweight.
My boy.
He's been real good.
I love Holland too.
Yeah.
So that's what I see next for those guys. And then the main event, Alexa Grasso versus Valentina Shevchenko, ends in a split draw. So how I broke it down, close to what Simon had too, but ultimately 2 wrong picks because we got the draw. And I don't hate the result because it was close. I actually thought it was 3-2 to Grasso, but most of the judges seem to be leaning 3-2 to Shevchenko. But the judge, Mike Bell, gave one of the most biased scorecards in UFC history to get this to a draw. He gave the last round a 10-8 to Alexa Grasso, where she was kind of getting picked apart on the feet for 4 minutes of that round. Valentina makes a mistake, tries to do a hidden arm throw, absolutely fucks it up. Always seems to make mistakes against Alexa Grasso. Fucks it up. Alexa Grasso gets on top of her, nearly gets in a rear naked choke, lands a little bit of ground and pound, is threatening, but for only a minute of that last round, and gets a 10-8. And man, that scorecard is so bad. I reckon there needs to be an investigation on it because, god damn, man, like, that is terrible. It's cost Shevchenko the win, essentially, because that judge had it for Shevchenko and then gave it a 10-8 to get it to a draw. So,
I don't like it when that happens, eh?
It's just dodgy stuff, man. Noche Latina, I get it. It's a Las Vegas, so it's not even Mexico, but the whole spectacle of it was based around Mexican Independence Day and representing those cultures. And Alexa Grasso is Mexican. So you could say, hometown advantage, but man, when it's that obvious, yeah. Like usually it's a little bit of a gray area. I know boxing's pretty bad at it, but you can, they kind of give it like, oh, rounds in the middle go to this guy when they shouldn't have. Yeah. This is a clear and blatant 10-8 in the last round. Yeah. So yeah, crazy stuff there. But ultimately it was a pretty good fight. I thought Shevchenko did make some adjustments. Her jab was landing a lot more in this fight than they were, than it was in the first fight. Shevchenko was really struggling with range in the first fight, and in this fight she was actually doing pretty good. She did get dropped really badly in the second round because Grasso's striking is very good. But yeah, Shevchenko also took her down with ease as well again in this fight. Grasso not making the adjustments to her takedown defense. So it was a really close fight as expected, but unfortunately...
Sorry.
No, that's...
Sorry, I just got a little mosquito in
pillow there. Hands, bro. You try to punch a mosquito.
Oh! There we go.
Bro, just keep missing it, bro. It ate three shots.
It's going like this, missing it.
Oh, bro, don't get into a fight, man, if you can't even squish a mosquito. Anyway, speaking of mosquito not squishing ability, these women's fighters, they had a good fight. And, you know, I see what's next for them. I'd run it back because it did end in a draw. Yeah. I see them going for the trilogy.
Yeah,
it does log up the division because you do have Erin Blanchfield and you do have Maren Fiorot waiting in the wings, who have kind of earned themselves
a chance,
a chance to fight for the title.
That was the one in the French card. She was really good.
She beat Rose Namajunas, which is got a good win.
Ass, like her face was full bleeding and everything, man.
Yeah,
still no phased.
But unfortunately, because of this trilogy, I think they're just going to have to cannibalize these contenders and make a number one contender fight between Erin Blanchfield and Manon Fiorot to get the true out and out number one contender. So run it back, get yourself a contender for the meantime. Let's get it done quickly so it doesn't hold up the division, because we've seen with Figueiredo versus Moreno 17 times that it held up the flyweights, and, you know, you had Kai Kara cannibalizing against Roy Val, and they were just all beating each other. And then,
Pantoja
like 2 years to get a title shot. Mm. He was waiting in the wings after earning a title shot, and he's like sat out for 2 years and finally got it and won. So we don't want it to be hanging around for too long. UFC Fight Night this weekend, we're back at the Apex. We've got a lightweight main event. Rafael Fiziev takes on Matheus Gamrot. Fiziev, a nasty Muay Thai striker with lightning fast hands, great power and vicious kicking techniques, especially to the body, and a great anti-wrestler. He has 90% takedown accuracy. And, you know, he's coming up against an extremely aggressive grappler, relentless at stringing together takedown attempts with ridiculous scrambling ability, impossible to keep on bottom. That was evidenced in the Armin Sarukian fight. A serviceable striker. He's not too good. He's got a decent 1-2 down the pipe. He has knocked some people out, but I wouldn't say that's the strength of his game. It's definitely a traditional striker versus grappler matchup. Yep. Fiziev being the striker, Gamrot being the grappler.
Well, Gamrot's on, I've just looked here. He's only had two wins by knockout. So,
yeah, so there you go. A lot of them will be subs or just grounded out to decision victories.
Yeah.
But I do like the way he fights. He's extremely tough. He's extremely fit, especially at the pace that he keeps with his constant takedowns and constant like stringing together. He's kind of like Colby Covington. He's like a lightweight Colby Covington in the way he grapples. So he is very impressive. And this is an extremely tough fight to pick. But I am going to go with Rafael Fiziev, begrudgingly. Anyone who's listening to this, it's a 50-50 fight, so really take my pick with a grain of salt. I'm going to go Rafael Fiziev by round 3 TKO. I'm going to bank on the fact that his takedown defense is enough to keep him safe in the early rounds here against Gamrot. The thing about Fiziev, he is fit. He showed he had a pretty decent gas tank against Rafael Dos Anjos, but he does slow down. He did slow down against Dos Anjos. He was easier to take down in the later rounds. He did slow down against Gaethje. It was a very close fight. And in hindsight, the performance he had against Gaethje is actually very impressive considering what Gaethje went on to do.
Against Poirier.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus. So Rafael Fiziev, you know, he does have question marks over his gas tank, and especially with a guy with the pressure and the pace of Matheus Gamrot, it's going to be dicey. But the 90% takedown accuracy, I'm going to, you know, rest on that and say that he is able to keep him on the feet. And Matheus Gamrot, he has been...
Takedown defense, did you mean, sorry?
Takedown defense, sorry. And Matheus Gamrot, he has been training apparently with the Polish national kickboxing team or something like that. So he has been trying to improve that aspect of his game. But Rafael Viziev is a bad motherfucker, and he is a vicious striker. All his strikes are with intensity, with speed, scary. With power.
Scary.
It's all pop, pop, like really aggressive. And one of his strongest elements is his body kicks. And then in the fight between Matheus Gamrot and Armin Sarukian, one of the best weapons that Armin Sarukian had in that fight was the body kicks he was landing on Matheus Gamrot. So I can see Viziev being really effective here, but with even a level higher than Sarukian, because Viziev's just got that little bit of extra oomph and a little bit of extra Muay Thai technique to him that, you know, can hurt Gamrot.
Scary, man. He's
he is scary. He is scary. And I think he's going to catch Gamrot coming in recklessly with the takedown, or maybe coming in a little bit sloppy with the hands, catch him in the third round, and then finish him with like side hammer fists as he shoots for a single leg, and the ref comes in and says, nah, you've had a little bit too much. We're going to end the fight. So I'm going Rafael Viziev, round 3 TKO with about 0% confidence.
I love when you say this, because I'm going Gamrot.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah.
I mean, we're looking through it, and it's very evenly. He's got a little bit more of a height advantage on him. I don't know a hell of a lot about Viziev, but from what I've seen with Gamrot, I am impressed with his fight style. And obviously just what you've brought in, he's aware of what he's going to be coming up against. He's preparing for that as well. So I'm going to go Gamrot, and I'm going to take him on a decision on that. I think this will go the distance, and he's going
to
get the decision.
And honestly, that is a great pick. And I will say to people who are watching this fight, if it gets to round 3 and Fazeev's kind of looking like he's lost his finishing ability and the power's still not quite there,
that's
chuck a live bet on Gamrot, especially if Fazeev is up in the first 2 rounds, because I think you'll be able to make some money, because Gamrot is a dog when it comes to those late rounds. Definitely. Do you have a sort of just, I know you're not really too familiar with these fighters.
I'm still learning the UFC like I am the NRL, like you said, Fazeev's one of the scariest fighters I've witnessed strike.
Yeah.
That isn't a heavyweight, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, man, that's where I have to lean.
Yeah, Viziev. Yeah, so I believe that kicks off at 10 a.m. the prelims, and then 1 p.m. the main card. So yeah, catch that on Sunday if you want to watch
it's
some good
such
scraps.
A nice sporting weekend again. It's like locked and loaded with it all.
Yeah. And the weather's been good as well. So maybe it's like go out in the morning, come back and watch them. UFC.
Yeah.
In the afternoon, you can watch the Buffaloes, Colorado Buffaloes, get another win.
Oh, okay. Oh, who are they taking on?
I don't have that on hand, but I know that they are 3 touchdown underdogs, and they have performed only really, the only game they haven't really performed well in was the game that they were favorites in. So expect it to be a close game.
They do face USC on their schedule, eh?
It's Oregon. They play Oregon, okay. And then USC.
Revealing their white unis in that. Yeah. Oregon ones look
good. And then they play USC, who's got the Heisman favorite in Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
Nice.
But I've seen a stat that Shador is actually leading the whatever division they're in
passing
yards.
Yeah.
Damn.
Impressive.
Well, that's another show for us. So, Brad, it was a pleasure to have you on with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It probably won't be the last time. It was good to, especially with the NBA coming up and as we get close to the NFL business season. But enjoy all of the...
I like to think I know my NBA a bit better than everything else, but hey, we'll find out.
NFL.
Yeah, for sure. But Micah Parsons is definitely...
Oh, that's right. You didn't say Chris Jones.
Yeah, I did say Kansas City are the best at the moment. So.
But yeah, no, thanks for coming on. Enjoy all of the Rugby World Cup, UFC, the league that's on at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen it all around the world at the moment. Everyone's behind it. Suncorp's going to be pumping. Sit down on the couch with a full box. Enjoy.
Go to a bar.
Exactly. Yeah. Get amongst it. So, up the mighty wires, and we'll see you next weekend for our review.
Up the wires, baby.
Peace.